you for joining us for live paranormal radio. From the paranormal to the unexplained, it all happens here.
It all happens here.
Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in our live video chat 24/7 with our live paranormal radio show hosts and other like-minded people. Live. Paranormal.com, the only interactive social chat room supported by Full Interaction Media. Stop by now and join the fun.
Stop by now and join the fun.
This is John Temporelli, co-author and editor of Heaven Can You Hear Me by the late famed Fox sighting psychic and legendary paranormal researcher Peter James.
This is the ghost host, Sophia Temporelli, and you're
listening to My Darkest Hour with Stefan Brigati on LiveParanormal.com.
Of My Darkest Hour. I am your host, Stefan Brigati, and thank you so much for joining us tonight. I want to give a shout out to everybody at iHeartRadio, Live Paranormal, Blog Talk, iTunes, everybody holding it down and getting the word out there, letting people access our show, and really pushing it. Do appreciate all the work they do. A lot of people don't realize there's a lot going on with doing these kind of shows. Even though I'm somewhere dialing into a network and doing everything, there's a lot of other people making things happen. And I just want to take the time to appreciate all of them for doing it for so many years. So with that being said, do appreciate it. So tonight on my show, I have a paranormal investigator, and we're going to bring in Bill Joko. And I could be saying the name wrong because that's what I do. You guys know me. You guys have been with me the past 10 years doing this show. And know that I'm known as the butcher, but it's all right. This is how we learn. Anyway, I've been friends with this person on social media and was checking it out. And I thought it'd be a great time to invite them on the show. Bill has been in the paranormal field for the past 20 years. He's been leading his group and trying to help teach and educate other people at Johnson Community County Community College. Which is great because, you know, back in the day, there was nothing really to go by as far as education, of learning about the paranormal, you know, so it's great to see community courses happening, and we have that out here in our area as well, but it's good to see that people are out there talking about paranormal, educating themselves, you know, on everything, because it's important, you know. If you're going to get into a hobby or anything that you want to do, your passion being, you're going to want to study that and really find out more about it and be the best you can at it if it really means that much to you. So if you are in that area, go check out Bill's classes. He's been the case manager and lead investigator of, he's been with Elite Paranormal of Kansas City in that area and, of course, the Unfinished Business Paranormal. He's the case manager and lead investigator for Elite Paranormal. So we're going to find out a little bit more about that. Another thing I found out interesting is he used to be part of Mid-America Bigfoot Research. We all know the big website and all the big gaming for information area. So it's a resource for people that are looking for more about the Bigfoot sensation areas. So you've seen that, basically just a hub of information, so I would go ahead and check it out. But you can also go to Unfinished Business Paranormal's social media pages. Like, for instance, they are on Facebook. I will put a link into the chat, or everybody who wants to go check them out and find out a little bit more about what they do, and see if they're in your area. Maybe you can sign up, get some more information from Bill. Like I said, he's doing the classes out there, and that means a lot. So with that said, let's go ahead and bring him in from the green room and get him logged on here. So 1 second, everybody. Here we go. Going live.
Come on, Bill. Now, Stephen.
Oh, you are? Good. I can hear you clearly. Perfect. Hey,
good, just
so I know, how do you say your last name?
Yackel. It's pronounced with the YA pronunciation. You did pretty good.
Okay. All right. So I was nowhere close, but that's all good. Thanks. But at least I know now for next time, right?
Yeah. That's all right.
Well, excellent. Thanks for joining us tonight. I know it's a little bit ahead of time over there for you. So I do appreciate you taking time out for us. So, Bill, one of the things I like to do in my show is everybody's got that spark that ignited their passion of the paranormal, whatever it might have been. Some have it later in life. Some have it from the beginning of life. If you could go ahead and tell us the background about your first experiences and how you got started in this direction of the paranormal.
Well, so when I was a little kid, about 5 years old, I thought I was having a dream, and something had got on top of my chest and held me down, and somehow I knew I told it to go away, not to threaten me. Of course, I wasn't saying that physically. I was saying that mentally. And then it moved my arm, armpit, and it hurt. It hurt so bad to the point where to this day I can't sleep with my arms above my head. I have to sleep with my arms folded down around my stomach. That was the first thing. Of course, at that time, I was just thinking, well, that's just weird sleep paralysis or something like that. So when I started watching Taps back in about 1998-99, I started seeing people with similar occurrences that weren't crazy, because I thought I was crazy for a long time. So that's what inspired me to get into it, was watching Taps and that personal experience that I had.
Well, it's one of those things. You just said, like, you're having these experiences and you saw that and then you realized you weren't crazy. I've seen all of that, and I've been doing this for 30 years, and I still think I'm a little bit crazy. But I think that's part of the drive, you know. It keeps us mind wide open and seeing what's going on and trying to bring in those experiences. And I think that's what a lot of the difference is.
Yeah. So I looked out for a group that I could try to hook up with, and I ended up with a group called Osprey at the time, and I was with them for about 2 years. And that was ran by Diane and Rick Gonzalez. And we did a bunch of different cases. And then about a year into it, we decided Diane developed a curriculum. And we went in and helped her do a class at Johns County. And there's a lot of different type of people. I was expecting more regular people to show up, but there was law enforcement there. There were doctors there. And there were lawyers there, along with just regular people as well. And that kind of surprised me, the audience that we had.
Yeah, that's good. You get a chance to actually get out there and do some investigative work with them, try to see, get your feet wet to see what type of investigation you want to do. Because a lot of people don't realize, they just say paranormal investigator. But in reality, there's more to it, because what kind of paranormal investigator do you want to be? You want to be a science guy. You want to work with psychics. You want to be the researcher guy, because there's so many different components to play in a paranormal team. What was your first draw when you started doing the paranormal investigative work with the team?
I started off pulling cable, setting up cameras, and doing all the grunt work for probably the first 60 to 90 days, and that's how you learn from the ground up.
Yep. Excellent. So let's take a step back. So you had the experience here, you said you're about five or so, and you experienced that type of sleep paralysis, so to speak, which it could be a sleep paralysis, but who's to know what really causes that? Maybe the spirit can cause that, because it's happened to me for years and years as a child growing up. then I just kind of put my foot down and started fighting back and said, enough's enough, and I never had it ever since.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
and that's what I kind of do now.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes that's what it is. It's energy transference. Like, whatever is causing
yeah.
that is taking your energy, whether it be malicious or not, just doing its thing. Still, we have to be cautious of that because it's still draining us, and I think in a ways it affects us, our bodies and stuff, and especially our minds, because you're awake and you're trying to figure out what's going on. You know, I've been there through it all, trying to yell out for somebody, trying to just move, and you can't do it. So it's like, whoa. That's interesting.
Yeah, so what I tell most people when they ask me questions about that, how do you know what's real or just you, and I tell them to go by just by their instincts. What it reminds me of is when you walk into a door, you walk into a room and then you feel like the hairs on your neck stand up or you feel like something's not normal, your instincts or your survival mode telling you something's not quite right.
Yeah. Exactly. That's why I think when you're laying there, you kind of go into that panic mode. You're like, what? And you stop fighting and fighting and fighting. And that's your instinct. You need to find out what's going on and break it off so you can get back to normal. But that's that's interesting. And a lot of people experience that. So that's one of those phenomena that we're still trying to figure out why it happens and it just comes out of nowhere. Why it affects some people in younger ages and not at all when you get older. So that's interesting.
Yeah, I think most people have it. They just choose to ignore it and block it out.
Yes. Exactly. I think it's because it might scare them a little bit, and they just kind of say it doesn't exist, and to them it doesn't exist. Yeah,
yeah,
I think a lot of people
yeah.
who tell me that they're they don't believe in ghosts or whatever, they don't, and I can tell the ones that kind of do because they're the ones that don't give you any information why they don't believe there's ghosts. They just kind of say, oh no, there's no ghost. They kind of shut it down. And I always tell them, like, it's okay to be freaked out. It's all right, but you'll figure it out, man. And I think people who are scared of it naturally just kind of push it that way because if they don't believe in it, then it can't exist.
Yeah, I mean, that's why some of the cases I've been involved in involve young kids. And what was explained to me is young kids don't prejudge anything. They're totally innocent. Whatever they see, it's reality to them. That's why they open up, and sometimes they're one of the main ones to see whatever might be happening, whether it's an entity or a first, and then it opens up the rest of the family.
Yeah, absolutely. So did anybody else in your family ever experience anything when you were younger?
Not that I'm aware of. Of course, now my son Robbie, he actually was a part of it. So when I was with the Unfinished Business Paranormal, we actually tried to develop a TV pilot for a TV series called School for the Dead. And he was a part of our paranormal team when we were on some investigations. He's been touched before, but nothing happened to him at home or at other places.
That's weird. Maybe they didn't follow him home, but maybe he was a magnet when he goes to certain places.
Well, so my founder of the group, Vince Porter, was really good about saying a blessing or a prayer before we went in someplace and then saying another one before we left, just to make sure something wouldn't follow us back.
And that's important. A lot of people don't even remember to do that. They get in there, they do their thing, and then they're just moving on. But it's like, hey, hold on. Just like turning on an oven, you got to make sure you turn it off when you're done with it.
That's right. That's right. Now, I have in the past, which was my mistake, I had something follow me home one time and it scared the crap out of me. But it didn't happen that night. It happened within 3 to 6 months afterwards.
That's a long time for it to happen.
Yeah. Well, so when we went to a place called the Church from Hell, which is where Paranormal State investigated a church in Topeka. And when I was the case manager, I developed some rapport with one of the caretakers, the oldest son, and he started talking about, you know, what had happened. You know, his dad and him and his brother were there as caretakers trying to rehab the church and live there at the same time. It caused them a lot of stress. So his dad was taking a lot of medicine while they were hearing footsteps and they were hearing noises in the main part of the church. And after Paranormal State shot that episode, his father passed away about a month or so later, and my dad passed away about a month or so later. So we developed a bond because we both lost somebody that was very important. So when I left, you could feel a heavy presence. It didn't feel threatening, really. You could hear EVPs that were threatening, but I assumed it was just his dad there wanting to say something to his son. So I relayed how I felt to his son, and that seemed to clear up his son and stuff. But whatever that negative energy was, about 3 to 6 months later, I was laying in bed upstairs, and I felt this. You know how if you have wooden floors, you have wooden slatted floors, you can feel something coming towards you, even if it's not in the room with you?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, well, whatever this thing was, I was half awake, and I could feel the pressure on the floor because you could feel it on the mattress in the bed, and it got closer and closer, and I kind of woke up, and I could feel it coming up off the floor, and its hands or legs or whatever it was pressed down on the corner of the bed, and you could feel the two appendages, one, then another, then its hind legs come off the floor and got on top of it, and then it kept coming towards me, and I could feel the weight of whatever the body was pressing down until it finally got on top of my chest, and it pushed down on my arms, and I woke up, and then it took off, and I couldn't sleep, and then I could always feel that heavy weight or whatever it was for the next about 6 months or so before. And what it comes down to is all I was doing was thinking about paranormal stuff, and once you do that kind of stuff, you don't get it out of your mind. I was told it can open up for other stuff to go towards you because you're more almost like a magnet to them.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, I mean, that's
what are you doing now? So what about the stuff you do now? Do you have anything coming home with you now? Or you go out to different locations?
I haven't done paranormal. I retired from it about a year and a half ago and decided I wanted to change. So I got into the Bigfoot world and been trying to do investigations.
Oh, that's
there.
Awesome.
Yeah. I mean, I still
okay,
do
cool.
stuff.
Cool. I'm sorry, what was that?
I was just going to say, I still do private home stuff for, you know, people in my town or close to me, but I don't do, like, public investigations and all that stuff anymore.
Oh, that's awesome. At least you're still helping people. That's great.
Yeah, yeah. What about yourself? What made you get into paranormal, Stephen?
I was born into it. Good times.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Have you ever went out
there? I used to see spirits and stuff. Well, I still see them, but when I was a kid, I saw them all the time. I never really thought much about it because I just thought it was an everyday thing until I realized that my parents and my sister couldn't see them. So it's like, okay.
That must have been hard for you.
As far as going into the paranormal field, when I got a little bit older, I had a couple of bad experiences. The whole journey of being in the paranormal and you know, just being surrounded by spirits and enjoying that life, so to speak, just kind of went bad one day when I had a bad experience. And it made me realize not everything's Casper the Friendly Ghost. So I wanted to learn a little bit more about it, say, okay, so, you know, what else is happening out here? And that just kind of launched me into that. My mother did a lot of, was part of the spiritual movement of the 70s and stuff. So I got to learn from her books and her group of friends a little bit, just kind of learning and educating myself. But as time went on, I just got more and more serious about it. And then I would come across friends who had the same who were scared but fascinated at the same time. So they would come along, and it just kind of went on from there to trying different things and just living the experience. And that's where I am now.
Yeah. Well, when I was with Elite Paranormal, that's run by Rob Garcia. We did the KU Governor's Mansion twice. The second time, we took a different type of group. We took a scientist. He's an IT guy, basically an engineer, but he had a scientific brain. And we took an intuitive, not a medium. And what we did is he developed a machine once she was inside the mansion, and we monitor her heart rate, we monitor her fluctuations, her pulse, everything. So that way when she said she was picking up on something, we wanted to see if she was picking up on something that the instruments would catch it. It at least caught her pulse would elevate, her heart rate would pick up, her skin would twitch, and her eyes would, you know, kind of fluctuate a little bit. So that was kind of cool. We did basically an experiment to kind of see if we could quantify what she was saying.
Huh. And what was she saying? Was she trying to deliver a message or anything?
Yeah, so the theory about the governor's mansion is that the governor of Kansas back in that part, I think it's early 1900s, had an affair with a maid, and the wife found out about it. And when he was off to Topeka dealing with something with the government, he came home and she had hung the maid from one of the chandeliers. And then when we did the first investigation, her name's Wendy Garrett. She said, "Bill, I know you've got head trash about what you think's going to happen or what happened here, but the energy I'm picking up may not be what really happened." She's really good about not leading me on, letting me try to figure it out for myself. And then the second time we were there, she did a reading, and what she came up with was the governor did have an affair with the maid, but then the maid had an affair with a younger delivery boy trying to hide it from him, and that the governor either did something to her or hired someone to do something to her and then let his wife take the blame, because after the maid died, there's records that show that his wife was in a mental institution for 2 or 3 years afterwards, and the maid was gone.
Wow.
So that's it. That's what she picked up on.
She kind of just pick up on that much old history and like that. That's so great. Just to have someone that can dial into that energy from way back then.
Oh, yeah. And she said that a lot of times, if, like, when you go into an investigation, you know how some people will claim there's, like, 3 or 4 different spirits there from different time frames. She said that each spirit that's in this house may be for different time periods, and they don't generally interact because they see the house the way it was when they lived there, and they might see each other as like a passing shadow figure or something like that. They generally, just like when we go into an investigation or see a haunted house, we're there for a split second, and the chances of us catching something are slim to none, but when we do, it's just for a split instant because something happened where we realize there's something there. I don't know if that makes sense or not, but.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So out of all the paranormal investigations and the things that you've done at different locations, whether they be private residences or historical locations, tell me about the most intense experience that you've had in your career as a paranormal investigator?
The most intense was probably the church, because that one hit home because of my dad and his dad and stuff happening, and then he was having issues with his brother, and he helped me through it, and I helped him through it, and it was hard. It still affects me to this day. It's hard for me to talk about, to be honest with you.
Yeah,
probably the most interesting case is when we were out in DeSoto, Kansas, and we're on Kill Creek Road, and we had an investigator named Amanda Payton who was with us. She took a picture of this bridge for some reason. She found like a little apparition that was there, so we all went out the next weekend to see if we could pick it up as well, And while we were out there, the Johnson County Sheriff's Department stopped by to see what we were doing, and they started asking my founder, Diane Gonzalez, you know, what are you guys doing? She goes, well, we're just out here because we caught a apparition on the bridge, and then they started talking to her. Well, you know, if you guys catch anything, let us know, because that's one of the places where Richard Grissom may have dumped bodies. He's a serial killer from the 90s around here that killed three girls suspected of killing seven more, but they never found the body. So we actually got to go to one of their he was a maintenance guy from apartment complexes in Lenexa, and we got to go to one of his former maintenance shops and investigate the shop to see if we could pick up anything. We caught some EVPs, but they were really hard to understand. But Amanda found in one of the holes in the insulation two pieces of a bracelet with initials on it. We gave it to the sheriff's department. They took it to the family. It turned out to be one of the girls' initials that was missing. And then we just kind of let it go from there. So that's probably the most interesting one.
That's pretty intense.
Yeah, well, it's different for sure.
Wow. So let's move on. Let's talk about Bigfoot. That's something that I find fascinating because there's so many reports all over the world, and it's such a hard creature to really catch definite evidence. I mean, I know there's evidence out there, so I've interviewed a few people, but just the elusiveness of this creature is just absolutely amazing. So tell me about how you got involved with that.
So I've always wanted to do it, and I didn't think there were a whole lot of cases in Kansas. Because we don't have gigantic forests like California, Texas, Oklahoma, you know, the mountain states, stuff like that. But once I started talking to some friends where I'm from, which is Osawatomie, Kansas, there have been a few reports outside of our town. I think they're more transient things where the Bigfoots go from one place to another and they're just passing through. But most of the sightings we've had have been around Oklahoma, Texas, down in the Ozarks in Missouri. So I always wanted to do it, so I just decided to join the group and started doing it.
That's awesome. And how did you start? Did you get a bunch of equipment? Did you meet up with a group of people to go out there and start doing this?
Well, so, I'm a member. I did buy a bunch of equipment. I bought a bunch of night vision scope. I bought a night vision binoculars. I bought a rangefinder in case you see something. The rangefinder I have will tell you the distance, and if you catch it just right, it'll also tell you how fast the thing's moving. So I'm one of the guys in the Bigfoot community that believes you should do science first, but also the thing that scares me, sometimes these Bigfoots, at least the ones around Oklahoma, Texas, and Missouri, seem to be more aggressive than the ones that are in California or Oregon. So, I don't know why. I don't know. But if you read a lot of the Native American articles in history, when they talk about them, they talk about Native Americans and Bigfoots having wars and battling.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't know why that is. I don't know why yet. I've never
They would have to have a lot more series of Bigfoot in the area if they were fighting with tribes of Indians. That's pretty intense.
Well, there was a story in Oklahoma in the early 1800s where a Native American tribe basically had their own police force. They were a cavalry unit. And some of their people, some of their kids and women started disappearing. And Indian police force was looking for them and ran into them. And what that turned out to be were a bunch of young, what they said were young juvenile Bigfoots, mostly males, that didn't have anything, no older male Bigfoot to guide them. So they were just out being rowdy teenagers, according to him. And they started attacking the cavalry, and the cavalry had to shoot some of them. Then they had to get down on foot and chase some of them off. They ended up killing part of the cavalry unit and killing some of the Bigfoots as well. That's according to the Native legend, anyway.
That's That's interesting. You know, you wish you'd hear more about those kind of stories and be able to see some of that stuff in the movies that depict some of that stuff. You know, why wouldn't they be out there? Because if they've been here this whole time along with us, and they live deep in the wooded areas or in the mountain areas where we're not all, you know, taking over and building cities at, which makes sense. But you would want to hear more about that in history if there's these legends.
Yeah, well,
you know, how can you movies about that? I'm sure it would sell.
Yeah, it's out there, but the Native American people don't like to talk about it too much. And then when they do, they don't want to be ridiculed by Americans or non-Native people, because supposedly we don't believe in their heritage, or not their heritage, but their similar beliefs, because we are Christian based versus they're not all. You understand what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, absolutely. That's interesting. And what about the evidence you've collected so far? Have you come across anything that leads you closer to that knowledge of the Bigfoot?
So I went out by myself a couple of times, and I haven't found anything yet. I went to the places that they said, my friends said they found tracks and heard bushes shaking and that kind of stuff. I didn't find anything, not yet anyway. So what I'm doing is trying to coordinate when we get cases here in Kansas. And since I joined, we haven't had any here in Kansas yet.
I wonder if did they hibernate, you know, if they hibernate during certain seasons?
That I haven't heard. I heard that they migrate to mate, and a lot of them seem to be transient in Kentucky and go through the mountains there. That's what they're thinking, because it seems like it runs from August until October. That's when they get their major activity. And they're all over the place down there.
That's awesome. I'd love to be able to hear more people getting into that and finding more evidence about that. I don't think there's enough researchers in that field that are bringing it to the table. I know there's a lot of people doing it, but we're not really seeing a lot of the stuff they might be finding. I just want to see more of the Bigfoot stuff. I think it's fascinating.
Yeah, that takes a lot more time to do a thorough investigation versus when you go on a paranormal investigation and stay overnight. This takes 2 or 3 days or longer to do it.
Yeah, because you're scouting and covering large areas and stuff. I mean, you're tracking and you're looking for certain clues.
People have bought drones to try and cover the places they can't get to try and drill down the areas they should search. Some people have went as far as to buy drones that are got IR and night vision on it to see if that helps.
Yeah. So what do you use for equipment? Do you use just like the basic track cameras and stuff like that? And what would somebody take on them to investigate for a Bigfoot?
Well, I just go off what I have. So I take off a lot of the stuff you use for paranormal. You could probably use for Bigfoot hunting. So I have trail cameras. I have night vision equipment. I guess some of these newer SLR cameras that we use for paranormal would probably work for that. A laser vid would probably work if you used it right. Set it up behind the trees, and that way if something passes it, you'd be able to see it behind the trees. So it would break the radius of the laser beams. You know, a lot of those motion sensors that we use in the paranormal equipment for when they walk by and start beeping, that would tell you at least something's moving in the woods. It probably would piss it off, and because you'd hear that screeching sound. I know it makes me mad when it goes off. So that would give you another indication. So a lot of the technology is probably fairly transferable.
And what do they eat? I've heard multiple different reports.
So from what I know of them, they eat pretty much like we do. We eat fruits. We eat vegetables, we eat meat. They do the same thing. It's proposed that they eat nuts, berries. They kill deer, I guess. I think they're more of a creature of opportunity. They see something, they think they can eat it, and they're hungry. They'll probably try to go after it.
Makes sense.
Like any predator.
I would probably do the same thing. Awesome. So what do you have planned ahead for the Bigfoot investigation? When things lighten up, are you guys going to go out there and do some camping and see what you can find?
Well, we're supposed to go on a expedition in August, I do believe, in Oklahoma. They have certain spots they go to. It's more like a meeting for people, you know, to kind of get together and sort of establish an area where they know Bigfoot's roam.
Yeah. And you have them near your area, or do you have to drive out way out in the hours away to go find them?
I'll have to drive to Oklahoma probably, unless I get a case up here. So Oklahoma, Texas, and Missouri are probably the closest states that are nearest me that have the most activity. We have teams, I guess we have teams out in California, teams on the West Coast, upper states, lower states, just kind of spread out. Like you were saying earlier, it's just an association, but we have members that are actually members of the group itself as well.
We have some areas out here in California that a lot of people go researching on and try to get evidence on, up here in the Redwoods and stuff.
Yeah.
I haven't seen anything, but then again, I'm not a Bigfoot hunter, but I know a couple people who are, and I know a guy lives in Tennessee. I guess he's part of, his ranch is backed up to part of the Blackwoods or something like that.
Yeah.
And they have some Bigfoot sightings, and he says he sees them all the time. He goes through a lot of hogs. He's seen them come over, and he's got like a wooden fence or whatever in the ranch. And he says this one is one of the adults, he calls them, is so tall, it just kind of just lift his leg and hop over the fence, grab one of his hogs and just take off. Like it's nothing.
Yeah. I've heard that. You ever heard of the legend of Boggy Creek in Arkansas?
No. Tell me about that.
Well, so there's a little town that's kind of like in the foothills of Arkansas. And there's a creek that runs from Arkansas down into Texas. And back in the early 70s, there's a Bigfoot supposedly that ran along the creek there. And the people that lived along the creek were getting terrified because the thing would come up out of the creek and start banging on windows and start banging on the side of the walls of the house and raising hell. And then another time, a farmer was out farming his crops. And the thing ran right out in front of him like it wasn't even scared of him. But, you know, doing the same old, you know, playing with the fishermen and scaring them and stuff like that. So they made a movie about it, and it's a big thing for them now. Now, I don't know if it's actually true or not, but they made a movie about it. But, again, it was fairly aggressive. That's one thing I want to find out, why the ones here are more aggressive than the ones in California and Oregon. There's got to be a reason for that.
Yeah, well, Northern California ones are probably just laid back and they don't want to do much. Just kind of how they are up there, man.
Yeah, it's interesting. So,
yeah.
Well, you know,
maybe it's because of the territory, or maybe they have to hunt more aggressively. I mean, there could be a few different factors.
Yeah, well, there's a group in Louisiana who goes out armed, and all they want to do, and I don't like the way they do it, but that's my own personal opinion. I don't want anything against them. But what they do is they go out and they put hunters or spotters along a trail where a Bigfoot runs, and if they see something, they shoot it. But what happens if it's one of their hunters? And he's in a ghillie suit, and a guy panics and shoots one of his fellow members. That's what scares me.
That wouldn't be good.
No. And Oklahoma passed a law where now it's official. They have a Bigfoot hunting season starting this year. It's legal to shoot him. You have to buy a permit, but you can shoot him now legally.
Huh, that's not cool. I would think they'd be more protected. I mean, they're so rare. I mean, come on.
we think they're rare. We don't know for sure.
Yeah,
we can't figure out
like
where they go.
Where we just can't get to it, or we just can't figure it out. But that's, I mean, one of the most elusive animals, or they're not even really animals. They're like smarter than that. They're like, they're almost like humans. They're, you know.
I think they're probably a relative of the gigantic Pithecus, which is a gigantic ape. It used to live like 40 or 50,000 years ago. It's like 10 to 12 foot tall.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it might be a split off that branch, to be honest with you.
Could be. They say the skunk ape of Florida could be a gigantic Pithecus. Just, you know, had been out of circulation, but, you know, they're still out there. I mean, who says they haven't evolved too? They're hunting smarter. They're being more elusive, smarter. Just because they're not dressed in clothes and driving cars and stuff doesn't mean anything. They've got intelligence and survival skills in a separate way than we do. So that makes sense.
Yeah, well, a couple of years ago, they found remnants of a small people on the island. They were like 2 foot tall, smaller than pygmies that were alive till about 20,000 years ago. And they didn't know they were there. But anyway, you just know them all.
Yeah, that's interesting. Wow. Well, excellent. I love the Bigfoot stuff. That's cool that you're out there doing that. I want to be able to learn more about it. So if you do come across something, definitely let me know. Continue adding. Show, but not that many Bigfoot investigators, and I do get it. That's a lot of time. That's a lot of expenses in doing that. The kind of equipment you need to go and do that, and it's not just like certain equipment. I mean, it's the survival skill equipment. You're out there in the middle of nowhere, so you have to have all the right kind of packing equipment, your GPS equipment. You got to be able to make sure you can get a signal way out there in the middle of nowhere. That's important, expensive stuff.
Yeah, and we don't charge. Like when I did the paranormal stuff, sometimes we would drive 2 hours away from our house, and we would pay for our own gas, our expenses, to get there and then to come back. We never charged anybody. We paid for our own equipment. I mean, we did work for, when I was with the Elite, we did work for the paranormal clergy on a case in Topeka, while we're in Wichita. That's a 2.5-hour drive for us at that time.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So what's on the horizon for you? What are you planning on doing next?
I'm going to stick with the Bigfoot stuff. For a job, I'm a IT recruiter during the day, a dad at night when I come home, and I like to fish and hunt, and then Bigfoot hunt when I get a chance.
Nice. Yeah, I saw the place you work at when you had it listed on your social media page, and I thought that was a Bigfoot site too. Greenfoot.
That's
I'm like, what's that?
Place.
Like an Earth Day type of Bigfoot thing?
No.
That's pretty amazing.
No, I work for a company called Page Technologies, based in Overland Park. We hire IT professionals to work for us out in the work site for our clients.
Okay, cool. You got a lot of good hunting sites and fishing sites out there? Good streams?
Oh, yeah. We have lakes, streams. We do have patches of wood, but we don't have, like, gigantic forests. And mostly, we're more of a rural agricultural state versus a mountain state or a big forested state.
Yeah. Very cool. Do you ever get out to do any of the Paracons? Are you speaking at anything or showing any events?
You know, that's never really been my thing. And this is going to be controversial when I say this, but so when I first got into this, I wanted to become famous, rich, and get on TV, right? Which is the wrong attitude to have. So when I was doing it for about my, 3 years on, I changed my attitude. I decided I didn't want to do the public investigations. My feeling is, if you have a place that's haunted, they're not meant to be haunted. That's my own personal feeling. So, like, the places, there's a place in Iowa that had an axe murderer kill the family in this house, and people go there almost every single weekend and investigate it. But if you start to think about what happens if there is really spirit there, what happens when someone goes there and asks the same questions over and over and over and over again? It probably tortures those spirits and those entities that are there. Hey, I don't want to have anything to do with that kind of stuff anymore.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. But the spirits just take off when they find somebody who's not interesting to them. They're just like, oh, dude, let's just go hang out in the balcony until this guy leaves. Yeah, because it happens all the time. That's why when I do my stuff, I'm always trying to think of something ridiculous that no one's ever asked them before. So either I've had psychics with me go, okay, one of them thinks you're really funny, and the other one's just getting mad at you. Like, awesome, but I'm going to get you either way. So that's awesome.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's cool. Yeah, definitely into the Bigfoot stuff. The spirit stuff is my big thing, and I have a lot of people on that talk about that, and we always talk about techniques and stuff. And I'm always trying to think of something different and creative. I started a thing called the Paranormal Music Party. And what it is, I go to different locations, and I'm doing a thing called the Paranormal Music Party. And go there the day before, and I talk to all the spirits, and I say, hey, you guys, you know, you guys have been doing all this stuff for all these people, so this is your turn. We're going to have a party. I'm going to play music of your era. Come hang with us. Come party with us. You know, so I'll try different experiments to see what era the spirits that might react to what era of music I'm playing. And I did that in my TV show for Paraflix, and it worked out really well. His building was from the 1920s up to current. So I said, hey, you guys, I want to play different music. And I started with music from the 30s. There was some activity. But when I got to the music from the wartime era, like the 40s, it was insane. Those spirits loved it. We got bodies moving on the SLS cameras. You know, it was just the meters were all blinking and stuff. It was almost like they were just reliving those moments of when they used to have fun at these old theaters, and this is what it was at an old music theater. So that's one of my things. I'm trying to go out and I give back to all the spirits, you know.
Yeah, and you're giving them peace by doing that.
Yeah,
yeah,
you know, because you're honoring them, and it's about them. It's not just about somebody who wants to know what's your name or if you're here with us. It's like, hey, forget all that. What about this song? You like this song, and then you just go for it, and they're just like, oh yeah, you know, they just get into it and get more activity that way.
Yeah. Well, I was taught that, of course, like when I first started, I did the same thing. Is there anybody here want to talk to me, blah, blah, blah. But then the founder of my group told me, just talk to them like you're talking to your friend or family. Don't act like you're trying to interrogate him.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't ask me to do tricks. That gets them. Because they'll decide if they're gonna do something for you, you know. Don't be like, oh, can you make this move? Just make it move. I dare you to make it move. It's like, oh, dude. You know, even just being an investigator in a room when someone's doing that, it's like you just want to leave. It's like, oh, this totally blows.
You know what? We investigated a haunted house in Kansas City one time called the Catacombs. And we went there on the off season, owned by Top Sheet, or was owned by Top Sheet. And when we went in, they had a bunch of coffins that are floated up from the river they put in there. And when we went in there, the story was that the owner of the place was thrown down an elevator shaft and impaled on the spring that stopped the elevator from coming up and down. So when we went in, we were in this main floor of the catacombs. We could actually, and they had like little rooms set up. They had a kitchen. They had a family room. This whole entire floor was set up in different rooms, like cubicle environment. So we were in there doing an EVP in the living room area. And you're talking about a warehouse, basically, where it's about 100 yards, I'd say about 150 yards long and about 50 yards wide. So this room was big. We asked spirits, if they were there, to come towards us. And you could feel the, of course, they had wood slatted floors. You could feel the footprints, starting all the way from the outer wall, walking in circles all the way around till they got to us. It took them probably a minute and a half to get to us. And then I told the team members to go back to back and form a circle. So when we did that, feel them walking in a circle around us, and it was so cold you could breathe out and you could see your breath. And I said, all right, that's enough. You guys need to go. We're done. We dealt with this. And they walked out back the same way they came in.
Wow. That's a good experience right there. That's like validation.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was pretty interesting.
Oh, awesome. Very cool, man. For those of you who are listening, you're listening to My Darkest Hour. We've been talking with Bill. How do you say your last name again?
Yokel.
Yokel. Yeah. The J is a Y, absolutely. And we've been talking about his experience in the paranormal field, and he's progressed on to Bigfoot research, which a lot of you guys who listen to the show know that I've really been getting into that and finding it fascinating. So it's been a great chance to really learn a little bit more about that. For those of you who want to, I did put up a link to his page so you can learn a little bit more. And maybe is it okay if the listeners reach out to you and ask you questions regarding the Bigfoot stuff?
Sure, they can ask the question about paranormal or Bigfoot stuff. I don't care.
Perfect, perfect. So with that being said, I'm going to go ahead and link his Facebook page on to the event page. That way you can ask him some questions and find out a little bit more about what's going on with that, because that is always interesting, and we'd like to hear more about that. But with that being said, we're coming down to the top of the hour, which means we're going to have to start wrapping it up. Is there anything else you want to promote? Do you have a new website you're putting together or anything coming out in the future that people want to see?
I'm good.
Okay. All right, but when you do, you're going to let us know then.
I definitely will, Stefan.
All right, Bill. Thank you so much. Appreciate you spending some time with us. So,
thank you, sir.
All right, buddy. Thank you. So that's going to be it for tonight's show. We got a little chance to learn a little bit more about the paranormal. A little bit more into the depth of Bigfoot and the research that's going on out there. And it's great to hear that that's still going on. You know, and it's one of those things that we keep searching and searching and we don't find anything. But, I'm not saying we don't find anything. We do find a lot of things nowadays. There's a lot more people using the better equipment and getting out there and doing it. But just hoping to find more about it, you know. It's just fascinating. If we're living with another species out there, how do we coexist with these things? How do we, you know, involve in our world and vice versa, so we're not, you know, overstepping those boundaries? Because that's what a lot of it, I think, is. We're moving into their territories, and they're looking for food and wanting to do stuff, and they're encroaching into our territories because we've already made roads in their forests and stuff. So we have to learn to coexist. I want to give a shout out to my sponsors, Chili Man Salsa, making all the best flavored chili salsas for us to eat when we're out on our investigations to give us some strength. I want to give a shout-out to PTEC, Paranormal Technologies, for making all the great equipment that we use on our paranormal adventures that you guys see on the TV show. Lately, I've been doing a lot of filming, and you get to see a lot of the new equipment coming out from PTEC in those shows. So, you know, once again, go to Paraflix. Check out My Darkest Hour and do the further to the TV series that I have now. We'll bring you on some more adventures with us so you can learn for yourself and see the places you want to go check out. And if you want, you can always email us and we'll go check out other stuff. If you have a spot in your area that you think would be interesting for us to check out, you can let us know. You can email me at mydarkesthourradio@gmail.com. That's mydarkesthourradio@gmail.com. And I will get back to you. It might take me a while since I get a lot of pictures and videos from other people wanting me to check out their stuff. But I will return every email that you do send to me. And with that being said, I also want to give a shout-out to Daniel's Toy Empire, you're looking for those great Ghostbuster toys, you can have Daniel's Toy Empire, and it could be a good deal. I just mentioned My Darkest Hour, and I think he's doing a 10% off or something like that currently. So check that out. Also, Lizzie Wizzy's Crafty Creations, you know, making those warm, wonderful wares for us. We're walking around those cold nights in the asylums when it's raining on us and stuff, keeping us warm and safe. But that's going to be it. We will see you next time right here on My Darkest Hour on Blog Talk Radio, Live Paranormal, iHeartRadio, iTunes, and we will see you guys next time.
This is John Temporelli, co-author and editor of Heaven Can You Hear Me by the late famed Fox Sighting psychic and legendary paranormal researcher Peter James.
This is the ghost host, Sophia Temporelli, and you're
listening to My Darkest Hour with Stefan Brigati on LiveParanormal.com.
Within the programs and chats do not necessarily represent the views of LiveParanormal.com.
Thank you for joining us on History FM Radio on LiveParanormal.com and History.fm. From paranormal to the unexplained history, it all happens here. Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in live interactive chat 24/7 with our radio show hosts and other like-minded people on www.liveparanormal.com, the only interactive social chat room supported by full interactive media. Stop by now and join in on the fun.
Thank you for joining us for Live Paranormal Radio. From the paranormal to the unexplained, it all happens here.
It all happens here.
Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in our live video chat 24/7 with our live paranormal radio show host and other like-minded people. Live Paranormal.com, the only interactive social chat room supported by full interaction media. Stop by now and join the fun.